Welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Pett, this is Radio Reverb, and this is your monthly foray into our lovely, glorious outdoors. On this month's show, I'm really excited about this one actually. I've really enjoyed putting this one together. We're going to head out with Susanna Alf, who's a shepherdess and has just got her own flock last year, and this is the first year of her lambing them. We head out with Caroline from Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, who talks us through their community garden based in Preston Park. And finally, we're going to be heading out with folk singer Sam Lee into a secret destination in the Sussex countryside. And we're going to be singing with the nightingales and listening to their beautiful song. But before all of that, let's have a different type of song, and this one is by Bobby Hebb, and it's Sunny.
Sunny, yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for the sunshine bouquet. Sunny, thank you for the love you've brought my way. You gave to me your all in all, and now I feel 10 feet tall. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for the truth you let me see. Sunny, thank you for the facts from A to Z. My life was torn like windblown sand, then a rock was formed when we held hands. Sunny one so true, I love you. Sunny, thank you for that smile upon your face. Sunny, thank you for that gleam that flows with grace. You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. Sunny one so true, yes, I love you. Sunny, yesterday all my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me and really, really eased the day. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you. I love you. I love you.
As Bobby Heaven, Sunny. Isn't it nice that it has actually been sunny? Delightful. Okay, first up, we're going to head out with Susanna Rouse. She's been a shepherdess for a lot of years, but this is her first foray into having her own flock. And this spring was the first time that they'd started lambing. So I wanted to go out and see what it was like to see a live little lambie get born and what work goes into that process and what it means to be a shepherdess, really. So we pick up Susanna here talking about the signs that you look for when a sheep's just about to go into labour.
They take themselves off, usually. They go off on their own a little bit. They like to be on their own, and then they find a little corner somewhere. I keep finding ones down there, staring into the wood. That seems to be a clear sign that they're thinking I'm going to lie. I stare into the wood and look sort of worried. And because it's their first time, they don't really know, you know, they just feel a bit uncomfortable. So they shift about, and then they go round and round. They lay down, and then they look behind them to see if anything's come out, and they scratch the floor. And when they get really far on, you can see a water bag come out, and then... And they do this stargazing where they lay down and they push their head back and they sort of go with their lips like that. Anyone that's done lambing should know. We'll be able to picture that, but that's quite a good description, I would say, of with quivery lips and looking up to the sky. But yeah, they take themselves off. Come here, here.
So this is the first year for this flock of them, of you lambing them?
Yes. So they were born just over two years ago. They're called gimmers if they're that age. And so some people lamb them as ewe lambs, but I wouldn't really want to do that. And
why not?
Because they'd just be a bit too small, and then their lambs would be quite small, and then they wouldn't be much good for anything. But people do that to get a crop out of them that year, and it just gets them going a bit sooner. But these have been quite slow growing, and so I've had to help a few come out, which I didn't want to because they're lambing outside. But once they're out, they've been up on their feet within seconds. They've been amazing, great lambs.
What's the choice with doing them outside as opposed to in a shed that you often see?
Well, I've always done indoor lambing from the age of 18. And then one year I went and worked on a really big farm in Storrington, and they had like 3,000 outside lambing Romneys, which this is what these are. And it was just completely changed my mind. It was amazing. We went to bed at night, got up in the morning, and out here there aren't really very many bugs in the ground. If you're lambing inside, all your time is spent sort of faffing with things and looking at things, bedding things up, mucking things out, feeding things. You have to sort of make sure the lambs don't get mismothered. They can get in a muddle because they're close together. There's more chance of them picking up infections and bugs because they're on that same dirty ground. Out here, especially these sheep, they've got 20 acres up here, about that. It's much cleaner, it's much easier. They can pick their own space. The only trouble you get is if you've got one that's lambing and it's in a bit of difficulty. Yeah, they're just getting very fat, and they lay on their side. They look like they've died. they tend to look like they've died a lot. It's so hot and they're so fat. They just kind of collapse and look suspiciously like they're lambing, so I'm constantly peering at
them. Yeah, that's what I thought. I got a bit excited. I thought maybe that one was going to go and stare at the woods.
If I need to catch one, that's when if she's in trouble. So you have to do some stealth creeping. Yeah, she's starting to do that. See, they look up and do that nibbly thing with their lips. And she's sort of twitching around. It's difficult to sort of... It's like a watch pot never boiling, you know.
Yeah.
When you're busy in a lambing shed, you can look at it and you think, oh, she's doing that, I'll go back, I'll do this, and I'll come back in 20 minutes. And you can keep looking at her. But this sort of experience where there's not many...
It's nice. It's not frenetic. It's a peaceful way to bring a little lamb into the world, isn't it? They're not stressed. Well, any more so than they would be when they're giving birth.
No. Well, yeah, quite.
But, not crammed in with each other. And
no. Well, she is lambing, because she could be quite early on with just her bag out. Or she could have been, you know, she could be in a bit of trouble. So you have to kind of just wait for a bit and have a little look and see, just assess her sort of body language and see what she's doing.
Yeah.
So I think we should leave her for a minute. It might be completely coming out normally. She just needs a bit of time and a bit of space. But she's not moving around much, so we'll go back to her and have a watch of her in a little bit.
I've never been able to walk this close to sheep before. They've usually pegged it long time.
Yeah. Ago. When I got them in July, and they were just very calm then. It's not too dark when it's very, very, if it's very, very yellow, anything that's coming out the back of her, it means that they've been on quite a while. Like the sort of liquid gets a darker and darker colour, and you can sort of tell if they've got something stuck.
Right.
But she doesn't look too bad at the moment.
So it looks like a little water balloon kind of hanging out, knocking alongside her udder.
Yeah, so she can feel it, and once it bursts, she'll go and sort of lick it all up, you know. They've been really, really maternal.
Oh, crikey.
Mad.
Have we spooked her? She's now running quite friskily across the field.
They don't normally run quite so...
That'll pop the bag, won't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, pop the bag. Right. It's probably because it's been feeling funny.
Yeah. Oh, Oh, that was a little poo.
Yeah, it was a little poo. Yeah. It can be a bit of a waiting game now. So I'm going to creep up and see if I can. She might just stay there.
So Susanna's just approached her with the crook and she stood up. Which just means it makes it... It looks like it's going to be a bit trickier to grab her. She's looking a bit anxious. So this is where the dogs come in. And they're just making a circle around her so she doesn't move away too far. The sheep is trying to... It's running one way and then the other. But the dogs have got her pretty well controlled, and now Susanna's just using the crook. The leg crook. Just very quickly to get a hold of her to give her a hand with birthing the lamb. She's not giving up very easily though. She's running around. She's gone quite far, about 100 metres. She's sort of hopping from left to right trying to get a way out. It can't be very comfortable with a bit of a lamb sticking out of your bum. Susanna's taken off one of her coats, rolling up her sleeves. Not easy to get near her. She's creeping up behind her. She's got the crook. And she's got her leg. She's got her leg. She's got good hold of the sheep. And it's just going to put her down onto her side. Susanna's just got her on the floor. Knee on the side. Roll up sleeve. Orange glove goes on. Is it all right to come a bit nearer? Or shall I... Wow.
That's some very large feet.
Oh, gosh. Wow, you can see its feet. So the sack's popped.
It is all coming right, but since we've got her, we'll give her a little hand, and then we'll know. Sometimes, because she's so enormous, she might well have triplets, and triplets often get in a muddle. So the next one, you know, if they're really big, and you expect there might be triplets, you can expect one of them might be backwards or something like that. And she's not too tight, she's not too bad. She probably would have had this on her own in the next half an hour, but I can feel the sort of tight rings where it's the first time she's had a lamb. So they just sort of open up gently. Like if you were to put your hand in a pair of tights and you had some rubber bands around it,
yeah.
Like there's sort of rings that open up with the hormones like going through her body will open them up, but it's just a bit new to her, so they're a bit tight, but it's fine. It'll be fine. I'm going to give her a little pull.
Yeah, two legs now pop coming out the front. Is that the face? That's the face.
Little nose.
It's amazing.
I don't really want to pull the legs all the way out, because as soon as it goes like a dive rather than with its feet under its chin, that's a much bigger space around its head and its shoulders. A much bigger, you know, shape to come out. So what I can do is I can get behind its head from outside and give it a little squeeze as well. But we won't rush it. It's not in distress or anything really, this lamb.
No. So how awake is that lamb now? I mean, how...
Well, it hasn't taken a breath yet. It's still living through its umbilical cord. So it's quite... safe at the moment. Yeah, if this was a really difficult birth and it went on and on for ages, you'd start worrying that its head was going to get out, that its head was going to get like swollen and things like that.
Oh, look, there he is.
I wipe his nose off easily.
The whole head's come out and he's just taken its first breath. It's like a hiccup. Oh, wow.
Here he comes.
And there it is, there's the lamb. Little cough.
It is a boy.
There he is, shaking his head.
They shake their head immediately. Sometimes they can come out with the bag, won't break. It made a little bleat.
It did.
It's incredible. I put it straight down the front to her.
And that's when she licks it and then it smells like her.
Yeah.
Is that right?
And
yeah.
She should love it straight away, but she has been a bit of a funny sheep. And she's talking to it already. The next one's queuing up. This feels like quite a large lamb. His little legs are pulling back and forth. Got my fingers around over the back of the lamb's head rather than pulling its legs. Because if you start pulling the lamb's legs when it's inside without making sure the head's coming at the same time, then the head sort of goes back like a snake. It has like a snaky neck.
Okay.
And when I was younger and learning, you know, I'd be lambing things thinking, oh my God, this hasn't got a head. Oh, just crazy things like that. When you think, I'll never get this out, and then it's usually fine.
Oh, is it sneezing? His eyes are wide open and he's looking around. And
I've been so thrilled with these lambs though. They've really been up on their feet really quick and sucking within, you know, a minute or so. Here's number two. A bit darker. There.
Wow. What a girl or boy.
It's a girl. Look, head up straight away. That's amazing. It's a beautiful lamb. This lamb's already turned around and... Oh, it's a smashing lamb.
Then we just back away and let them get on with it. It was so much fun doing that. We actually, the lambs were super cute. I mean, they do just plump out and then start kind of trotting around a little bit, really unstably on their little leggies. But yeah, I saw five lambs get born that evening, or that afternoon, it went into the evening. And Susanna had to help along a few, and it's really quite something. I've never actually seen anything be born before, so it was really very special. And it's something about being on a small farm like that. Susanna really cares about her flock and what happens to them and how they're treated. And it's such an advocate for getting your meat from small scale farmers and, you know, locally produced. You could already tell that she wasn't too keen on the thought of them heading off to the slaughterhouse, which, yeah, it definitely makes you consider eating lamb. I actually was in Waitrose the day after I did that, and they had some New Zealand lamb on offer, and I just couldn't do it. But she's great, and what she's doing there is really fantastic, and I wish her all the luck in the world with her new lammies. You can find out more about her on Facebook. She's got a page. It's called Barkham Romneys. I'll put the link for that up on the Radio Reverb website on the Growing Wild show page. We're going to have a song and then we're going to head out to another community garden in Brighton. But first up, let's have a bit of Ella Fitzgerald.
So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. Somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be
Ella Fitzgerald and Someone to Watch Over Me. That was actually Susanna's choice, and a very fine choice too. Okay, next up we're going to head out to another community garden in Brighton. I really like going to these gardens because I think they've got such an important place in this city. And this month I went off to Preston Park. They've got a demo garden there, and Brighton and Hove Food Partnership kind of run it, I suppose. I went and caught up with Caroline, who is their community grower, and we hear her next just telling me about the garden.
So this garden has grown from its original size, which was just a couple of raised beds. They went in 4 or 5 years ago, and as the garden's grown, the number of volunteers has also increased. And so the scope of the garden, which is for the purposes of demonstrating some techniques around growing food. So we've probably reached our full size now, but there's a lot of enthusiasm to sort of spill out into doing the wildflower beds and stuff around the park as well.
How big would you say that it is?
I think it's probably about the size of a standard old-fashioned allotment, to give people an idea of what that is. But it's probably typical of quite a few gardens in Brighton and Hove. It's not an enormous space. But we managed to pack it all in, you know, try and grow as much as possible in the smallest space imaginable.
It's flourishing.
Thank you.
And you say it's a demo garden. So what exactly do you mean by that? Is it so that people using the park can see the sort of things that they could grow themselves? Or, you know, why is it a demonstration garden and not just a community garden?
It's definitely a community garden as well, but its purpose in being in the park and being so visible is to inspire people to try things at home. So we have a part of the garden dedicated to growing in containers, for example, because for some people that's what's achievable in their own space. It might be they only have a patio or a balcony, and we'd like to think that as people walk around the garden they'll see things that they can take home and try. We often get people popping by and asking us for advice, which is very flattering because they obviously think we're doing all right.
And how often are you down here?
The group meets here once a week on a Wednesday morning, and I come every other week just to, you know, suggest a few things that we might want to do some planning, for example, working out what's going to go where at the beginning of the growing season.
How many volunteers do you think you have here?
In total, there's a group of about 12.
Okay.
Generally, it's between 6 and 8 that come any one session. No one's obliged to come to every single session. They're very dedicated, but there's no hard and fast rule about how many people turn up to any one session.
Has it helped your growing at home? Are
you able
to grow at home? Absolutely,
100%. Yeah, I do grow at home. And I've maybe become a little bit less haphazard as a result of growing in other spaces with other people, because some of the volunteers are immensely experienced. In this group alone, we've got an older chap who has been growing for longer than I've been alive, and his expertise is invaluable. It's 100% enhanced what I practice at home, and there is scope for being a bit experimental, so that's also nice. You learn from the successes, and of course also from the failures, of which occasionally
always,
yeah absolutely.
Of course. That'd be quite interesting to have a chat with some of the volunteers and see what they get from it as well.
I think they're keen to talk to you too.
What's your name?
Do you want to say your name?
Mummy.
This is Forrest, and I'm Karen.
Lovely.
And we've been coming to the vegetable garden for a few years, haven't we? And we absolutely love it. It's really welcoming, and I think it's a really good... it's really good for people to see vegetables growing. It's really inspiring for people that are passing, and children to be able to touch and feel the plants. And I've really enjoyed it because I've learned so much.
What sort of things have you learned?
Today, for example, just today they're planting beetroot. And I've learned that beetroot needs it needs soil that hasn't got lots of lumps in it. So it's good to sieve the soil if you're planting beetroot or carrots, because that's how you get like wonky, strange shaped carrots. About earthing up potatoes, but how to grow potatoes. So just I get to ask all my questions. I've just got an allotment. This inspired me to get an allotment.
Oh, wonderful.
And my son is 3.5. And gets to, you know, just planted some beetroot seeds, haven't you? And just tasted some chives. And we learn so much, and the people are so friendly and so helpful.
Why would you recommend doing this to somebody that might be interested in being a volunteer?
Just because the people are really lovely. We have lots of tea breaks.
Do you think the social side is just as important?
The social side is really important, yeah. It's being part of a community. It's inspiring for other people. It's fun, and mainly because you learn a lot, so you build your confidence up. Yeah.
So we're just going to have a walk around the garden and see what's growing. There's quite a few raised beds and a bathtub, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. The area we're standing in now is really our sort of annual veg garden, and here we practice a crop rotation to minimise the build-up of pests and diseases, but also to give the plants the best possible chance of getting the nutrients they need. In this bed, we've got this is our legumes bed, so these are runner beans that went in today. Our potatoes are starting to show. We'll let them get a little bit bigger before we earth those up.
Mm-hmm.
And then this bed is allium, so that's onions, garlic and shallots. That just had a little bit of a weed today because they don't really tolerate weeds particularly well. And then this empty bed here is going to be for brassicas, so that will be things like kale, cabbage, sprouts and so on. And we're going to build a frame for that in the next couple of weeks, cover that with netting because brassicas have a million and one pests, it seems.
Yeah.
So we need to protect them. So those are our four main beds in the rotation.
Okay.
the blueberries here in the bath, they like an acidic kind of moist soil, so that's why we've kept them in the bath. It stays quite damp in there, and we water those just with rainwater because they don't tolerate the tap water, the mains water, particularly well.
Is that ericaceous compost?
That's
in there
it.
As well?
Yes, absolutely. And we mulched it last year with some bracken, which we hope will add to the acidity. So they're doing all right. One of them's in flower, so if it stops raining, we might get some pollinators on that. And in this bed, we put in some young marrow plants. Again, a little bit touch and go, a little bit early. We'll see. We've got backups if they don't work.
We all need a backup.
Well, everyone needs a backup. I don't. Yeah, you can't have too many marrows, I'd say. But come back in June and see if we're still feeling enthusiastic about our marrows. And yes, there is actually now sort of sleety, snowy, haily stuff landing on the mic for the viewers at home who are probably sitting outside in their gardens drinking pina coladas by the time this is airing.
Yeah,
we filled our water butts and gave everything a good drink, which feels bonkers when you're standing in a hailstorm.
It's very productive. I'm very impressed. I mean, it all looks very healthy, what's growing, and
we take good care of our soil. I think that's the trick to healthy plants, is to really put lots of attention into the soil, and we don't use any chemicals and we don't use pesticides. You won't see slug pellets here or any artificial fertilizers. We only use things like compost tea.
And also, probably, I'd say fairly importantly, what happens to the crops? Who gets to eat them?
When we do have crops, we obviously the volunteers get first bite at the cherry, so to speak. And occasionally people drop by the garden, and if there's some extras, we would donate it to people who drop by the garden, although, you know, that's rare. But I would say the bulk of it, probably about 75-80%, goes directly to the volunteers. It's only the stuff that they don't take that we find other places for it to go.
Okay, well, that's good enough reason to be a volunteer.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I went to that garden. It was about a month ago now. It's kind of the end of April, and it was fully hailing. We stood there in a full-scale hailstorm. So Caroline is right in predicting that now hopefully we are all sitting out in our gardens having a pina colada, that popular 80s beverage. Brighton Hove Food Partnership, who Caroline works for, who run that garden, are a brilliant organisation, and I really encourage you to have a look at what they do. Their website is bhfood.org.uk. They're a non-profit organisation, and they help people to learn how to cook and to eat well and to grow their own food and how to reduce food waste as well. So yeah, it's a brilliant organisation, and they are affiliated with so many of the gardens across Brighton, and if you were interested in volunteering, then they're definitely people to get in touch with, because they can put you directly to the gardens that are actively looking for help right now. So I'll put that link up on the show page on radioreverb.com and the Growing Wild show page, so check it out if you want to get involved in any of the things that they do. I'm going to play a song, and then we're going to head into the last quarter of the show, which I'm really excited about, actually.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two times, girl. I'm gone away. Love me two times, girl. One for tomorrow, one just for today. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me one time, do not speak. Love me one time, yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two times, girl. Lost me all through the week. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me two times, I'm gone away. We'll be right back.
sunshine. Could not speak. Had me one time, baby. Yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two time, girl. Last week, all through the week. Love me two time, I'm gone away. Love me two time, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two time, baby.
Doors and Love Me Two Times. I'm Charlotte Petts and you're listening to Growing Wild on Radio Reverb. Okay, next up, we've got quite a special segment. I was fortunate enough to spend some time with Sam Lee, who's a folk singer, and he does these wonderful outings into the woods in a secret location in deepest, darkest Sussex. And he leads out these small groups and you sit around the fire and have a lovely little chat, and you get fed some very tasty food, and then you head out into the woods and go in search of the nightingales. Now, in this particular woodland, it's fortunate enough to have attracted some nightingales. They are quite rare now in this country. So this year there were actually six, which is the most that this particular section of woodland has had for a very, very long time. And the numbers have just been gradually increasing over the years. So yeah, it's topping the charts at six. And we didn't hear six nights. I don't know how common it is to actually hear all of them singing at the same time in the evening. Because as soon as a female swoops in, then they sort of shut up, really. Because it is very much to attract their attention. But anyway, Sam's going to explain all of this in the next package. So let's just join him singing a lovely song, Round the Fire.
Faint and weary, what is ail, my lord, my dearie? Oh, mother dear, let my bed be made, for I feel the gripe of the woody nightshade. Lie low, sweet Randall. Thank you very much for joining us all here, coming into the woods on this eve of May Day. For us folkies, this is like Christmas Eve. Combined with Passover and Ramadan, all in one. So it's a very special night. We're already talking around the fire about whether we actually go to bed or not. We're just rolling the dew all night. And I'd like to introduce on my right the wonderful Emily Portman, who I'm sure some of you know, folk singer and songwriter, who is our guest musician for tonight. we're going to listen to the mercurial gold of the forest, of the nighttime forest, and each night is remarkably different. And I'm not allowed to say it really, but it's a bit like taking drugs. It's very magic what can happen should the birds choose to sing, that is. Tonight is a night to celebrate, to discover, and to commune with the nightingale. The call is, it's called to lovers. It's the lover's call. It's just the male birds that sing, and they sing all day and they sing all night. There's this kind of strange time where they sing during the day and then they stop around now and then they wait till dark and then they go into their night song. And their night song is a very different patterns and a very different quality to it.
So there are folk songs that talk about my love is, he sings sweeter than the lark or the linnet or the nightingale at the break of day, you know, these comparing love to bird song seems to happen a lot. And there's also very, there's erotic connotations, aren't there, to a lot of folk songs about birds. So I could sing you one of those. Well met, pretty maid, and be not afraid, I mean you no mischief I vow. What is it, your will? Come give me your pail, and I'll take it safe home to your cow. Cow, I'll take it safe home to your cow.
If you'd like to join in with it, it always repeats the last verse.
Oh, leave me alone, I've hands of my own, I need none of your assistance, I vow. I vow and protest, I'll never be kissed by such a proud fellow as thou. By such a proud fellow as thou. Hark, my love, hark, for yonder's the lark. She warbles and pleases me so. And the beautiful tale of the sweet nightingale as she sings in the valley. Violets around her do spring. Likewise in the bush there sits a song thrush. It'll charm you to hear how she sings, whistles and sings. It'll charm you to hear how she sings. So they both did agree next morning with speed to get married as soon as 'twas day. Now she no more is afraid to go down in the shade to hear the birds whistle and sing, whistle and sing, to hear the birds whistle and sing.
So that just gives you a little idea of what it was like around the campfire. It was, you know, very singy and folky and very gentle and very soothing. And you sit there until the light just starts to fade and it gets to about 10:30 in the evening. And then we all head out and we don't use any torches. And so the whole purpose of sitting there is for your eyes to adjust to the darkness very gradually so that you don't have to use any torchlight. And then we head off. It's about a 30-minute walk out into the woods, which is quite challenging in a lot of ways because your other senses become very alert and the footing is obviously very uneven. So you do stumble around a little bit, but you kind of have to be very soft with your landings. And you go on this walk with these about 15 other people in complete silence and then pause in this gap in the hedge and a field stretches out in front of you. And beyond that, there's the old railway line where these nightingales live for this period of time. And their song just starts bellowing out at you, really. It's very, very strong, very loud. And you can hear it across this field. And then so we pause and listen to that for a while and then head off further, deeper into the undergrowth and then stand and right next to where this bird is singing. And you can never see them because obviously it's very dark, and to look at, they're not actually much to look at all. It's all about the voice, and probably what a lot of people say about people in radio, but it's a lot about the voice. It's all about the voice, and to be so close to it, it really pierces your ears. It's a very strong sound. So this next section is us standing next to the bird and Emily, who you heard there singing, Emily Portman, who's a wonderful singer and folk artist. And so it's her and Sam playing on their instruments. You've got the concertina, and Sam also playing something too. So we'll pick this up with us standing next to the bird and very gently starting to play along with the bird and see how it reacts to the sounds that we make. And then its sounds then begin to change. It's really very special. So yeah, you can tell it's a very sweet little interaction. And this bird was actually particularly shy. I mean, Sam's been down there before. He does quite a few of these in spring, and he'd been down there with a saxophonist and a violinist and, you know, making quite a lot of noise. But this particular bird, he was just a little bit shy on this evening, so they both tried to sing along with the bird, but as soon as they did that, he went very, very quiet. So the interaction was just, it especially responded to that concertina. But actually, I had a little interview with Sam the following day just to talk about that evening and his take on it and how it was quite different and how every one of them is different actually. And so yeah, I'll let him explain. And this is Sam Lee.
It's a way of experiencing nature in a very unique form, where you can get very close to nature. You get to experience the silence, and you get to feel the kind of the proximity of feeling like nature is very aware of you, and but kind of cool with you being there. And I think often we feel very much like you pass through nature, and you don't have any impact on it. And what is the what is my place here? But I think when it comes to singing with the nightingales, the word, you know, playful comes up, that you suddenly feel like you've got this amazing interaction and acceptance, and it's a creative one, and it's one on a level that everybody loves because it's musical. And there's something so serene about it, with the silence of the night, those gaps, the exploration of silence, the celebration of silence is so important in it. And yeah, I just think they're a kind of, you know, it's like one moment where one particular member of the ecosystem steps out onto center stage and goes, show is mine right now. Yeah.
And how do you feel when you're doing it, when you're singing with them? How do you feel?
Induced. It might be the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doped. Melancholic. It's an melancholic or joyful, it's a real amplifier of my kind of state of mind. It's really funny, if I'm having a really good day, it's suddenly overjoyous. If it's been a hard day or a hard week or something, it kind of accentuates all the emotions. And yeah, so it's, I don't know. I mean, that's all obviously all projection of my own, and everybody's having their own unique experience, but everyone is having a real sense of revelation.
That was Sam talking about his experience and how it feels for him. They've now finished, but he will be doing that again next year, and you can find out more about that on his website, which is samleesong.com. But I'll put that link on the show page on radioreverb.com, and it's the Growing Wild show page. Right, well, we're coming to the end of the show. I'm already excited about next month. I've been to the Chelsea Flower Show and just had the most incredible time. I was fortunate enough to get in on a press pass and speak to some pretty famous people, and also the designers who do such a great job there. It's a bit of a departure potentially from what this show is about, but there seems to be a bit of a scene change out there where a lot more wildflowers are coming into it, and they seem very actively encouraging greening up Britain. A whole garden was built with that in mind, actually, greening up Grey Britain. So I wanted to go along and just see how that was now, and it just, you know, and see how that's changing, and how within the minds of designers it's very important to actively encourage our wildlife. So that's going to be next month. And yeah, lots of other exciting things as well. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Do carry on listening to Radio Reverb. It's online, it's on digital, and it's on 97.2 FM. I have been Charlotte Petz. Thank you very much for listening. You can catch the podcast on iTunes. If you search for Growing Wild on iTunes, then it's on there. And it's also on growingwildreverb.podomatic.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's Growing Wild FM. Radio Reverb is on all of those forums also. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and I look forward to speaking to you again next month. And I'm going to play you out with Mungo Jerry in the summertime, because it's actually summer. Take care.
What you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If a daddy's poor, just do what you feel. Speed along the lane, you can turn or return at 25. When the sun goes down, you can make it good and live by. When I thank people, when I daddy, when I mean, we love everybody, but we do as we please. When the weather's fine, we go fishing or go sailing. See, we're always happy, last we're living, yeah, that's our philosophy. Sing along with us, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, da-da-da-da-da, yeah, we're happy, da-da-da, dee-da-da-dee-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da. Settle down. If she's rich, if she's nice, bring your friends and we'll all go into town. Philosophy.